The volcanic island of Krakatoa, its massive eruption 120 years ago, killed man and beast and may have marked the beginning of global communications. That story just ahead on All Things Considered. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. It took the island of Krakatoa a little under a day to destroy itself back in 1883. The volcanic island between Java and Sumatra in present-day Indonesia was blown to smithereens in an explosion of unbelievable force. Nearly 40,000 people were killed when Krakatoa erupted, or as one nearby telegraph operator cabled with remarkable understatement, all gone, plenty lives lost. In his new book, titled Krakatoa, Simon Winchester describes the huge pulses that led to the volcano's cataclysmic eruption at 10:02 in the morning, August 27, 1883. The sound generated by the final blast, he writes, was almost certainly the greatest sound ever experienced by man on the face of the earth.
It was heard as far away as 3,000 miles away from Krakatoa, which is the equivalent of an enormous explosion happening in New York City, say, being heard in San Francisco. So an extraordinarily loud detonation. And then tidal waves, the tallest of the tidal waves, 136 feet high. I mean, amazingly big maritime disturbances. There are many, many other things, but basically four big bangs, four enormous tidal waves.
I'd like you to read from your book your description of that final explosion of Krakatoa. It's on page 234.
Explosions like a battery of guns are heard across in Telok Betong. Lightning strikes the lighthouse at Vlaka Huk in southern Sumatra. The lighthouse at Fourth Point, just to the south of Anyer, is hit by a vast wave and destroyed, ripped off at its base, leaving only an amputated stump of jagged masonry. An immense wave then leaves Krakatoa at almost exactly 10 a.m., and then, 2 minutes later, according to all the instruments that record it, came the fourth and greatest explosion of them all, a detonation that was heard thousands of miles away, and that is still said to be the most violent explosion ever recorded and experienced by modern man. The cloud of gas and white-hot pumice, fire and smoke, is believed to have risen, been hurled, more probably, blasted as though from a gigantic cannon, as many as 24 miles into the air. A fearful explosion, a frightful sound. Captain Sampson of the British vessel, the Norham Castle, wrote simply in his official log. I'm writing this blind, in pitch darkness. We're under a continual rain of pumice stone and dust. So violent are the explosions that the eardrums of over half my crew have been shattered. My last thoughts are with my dear wife. I'm convinced that the day of judgment has come.
Of the 36,000 people who died as a result of the explosion, most of them did not die the way we think victims of volcanoes do, which is engulfed in very hot lava flows, for example. They died because of sea waves.
They did. I mean, tsunami, or what we carelessly call tidal waves, were thrown up by these cataclysms, and they were what did most of the destruction. And the photographs taken at the time show the extraordinary power of water. I mean, railway lines twisted like just ribbons at a party, and cement buildings torn off their foundations, and an enormous ship, which was at anchor, picked up by the wave and carried 2 or 3 miles inland. But all sorts of other physical phenomena. I mean, barometers went haywire as huge pressure waves circled around the world. And the dust, an enormous amount of dust sent up into the air, which swirled slowly round and round the globe in an enormous spiral and causing extraordinary sunsets and all sorts of other phenomena, not least, of course, being a lowering of the world's ambient temperature by about 1 Fahrenheit degree. Remarkable number of consequences of this eruption.
You write about those sunsets that were seen around the world in South Africa, Chile, Denmark, and also in Poughkeepsie, New York. Tell us about what happened there.
Well, in Poughkeepsie, 7 times in the autumn of 1883, the spotter on the roof of the fire station in Poughkeepsie, New York, spotted enormous conflagrations in the western suburbs of the city. He dispatched the fire engines, great horse-drawn fire engines. And of course, there was no conflagration at all. What he had seen was the extraordinary, unbelievable orange sunsets of the setting sun, which had been caused by the dust in the upper atmosphere spewed out by Krakatoa 10,000 miles away.
One of the other after effects of this explosion were these huge rafts of pumice stone that had erupted from the volcano and were spread around the world with terrible cargo that you write about.
Yes, I mean, school children in Zanzibar found rafts of pumice with skeletons, human skeletons on them, and ships passing in the central Indian Ocean talk about coming across vast islands of pumice laden not only with dead human beings, but with tigers and monkeys and all kinds of animals, as well as palm trees and other evidence of island jungle life. So they were indeed freighted in a most bizarre way, but there were thousands upon thousands of tons and many, many of these islands of pumice scattered all over the world, driven by currents with very bizarre things on board them.
And these were found months after the event.
I think the children in Zanzibar found theirs well over a year after the eruption had happened in 1883. I think it was the summer term of 1884 that they were discovered.
It's your view that Krakatoa and the eruption of Krakatoa marks a time when the world becomes interconnected. How so?
That, to me, is one of the most interesting things about Krakatoa. It happened very, very shortly after the completion of what were some of the very first of the world's submarine telegraph cables. The Boston Globe published an account of Krakatoa 4 hours after it had happened, and it was the beginning of the global village that we know today. It was the beginning of the first foreign correspondence went out because editors realized they could get news of these stupendous events very, very soon after they had happened. By contrast, when President Lincoln was assassinated, it took 12 days for that news to get to London. So things changed. The world was a very big place before 1883, very much smaller afterwards.
The eruption in 1883 completely obliterates the island of Krakatoa, but it's not long before a new volcano rises from the sea called Anak Krakatoa, Child of Krakatoa. And you go there. You climb up to the crater and look inside. What did you see?
Well, it's quite extraordinary. First of all, I climb up it, and it's very, very difficult because it's extremely hot. It's erupting still. And you look into this vast, bubbling, yellow, smoking cauldron, which is the actual place where the processes of the world are at work. And you get a tremendous sense of personal humility that nothing that mankind can do has any significance compared to what geology can do. Mankind exists on this world, as I think some philosopher said, by geological consent. Here was geology consenting to let us survive a little while longer, but nonetheless giving a very clear indication that it is waiting, it is watching, and it can do terrible things.
Simon Winchester, thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Simon Winchester's book is called Krakatoa, The Day the World Exploded, August 27th, 1883.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.